This is the fourth of the lectures on expansions of periods and their ilk. And in lecture number three, I had begun talking about the phrase group. And phrase groups really aren't expansions of periods. They're just another way of looking at phrases together. As I told you in that lecture, I'm sort of into the grab bag. What's left over and doesn't seem to fit anywhere else. And phrase groups certainly seem to fall into that. This lecture is about two topics, and these are both very much grab bag items. The first of these is what is called a chain phrase, or chain phrases, if you want to use the plural. The term itself isn't necessarily used by every analyst. You will sometimes find some disagreement about the meaning of the term. But I'm using the term chain phrase in its most common usage. Chain phrases are very, very common, and where they're particularly found are in sequential passages. And because they're found in sequential passages, passages that are part of harmonic or melodic sequences, they also tend to be transitional passages, because sequence, as a rule, is a transitional device and not a device used for primary musical material. This is a situation when you have small little phrase bits, like 2 measures long or 1 measure long, that are rolled together in a sequence so that each one of those measures or 2 measures is one of the links in the sequence, one of the iterations. And altogether, they will form a larger unit of X number of measures. People sometimes get very confused about what to call those. You know, I mean, are these single phrases? Are they periods? Are they phrase groups? What are they? No, it's a chain phrase. And that's how you can deal with these issues when you see them in a work. Works like, say, for example, the Baroque and the Viennese Classic, in which sequences are such a common part of the language. And sometimes these chain phrases, these little groups of phrases together, will fall into larger phrase units. Say, for example, if you have a 2 measure long unit, it may have a tendency to kind of move in pairs, so 2 plus 2, which makes for 4 measures, and it'll start sounding a little bit like a whole phrase. That's not at all uncommon, but it doesn't have to happen. In fact, they can tend to kind of go all over the place. Also, within a chain phrase, it's not at all unusual for the size of the link to change. It may start out, for example, say with a 2 measure long link, and then late in the sequence it'll move to a 1 measure long link or less. That's because as the sequence progresses, it can be musically very, very effective to speed up the harmonic rhythm of the sequence. And as you speed up the harmonic rhythm, therefore, the changes in the sequence are going to come faster and faster. There are about 4 gazillion of them out there in the literature to look at. Let's take a really well-known one and just use it as our example, because it's a chain phrase that also has that speed up of the harmonic rhythm that I talked about. Be sure you have your score in front of you on the note from the notes. This is the Mozart Sonata in F major, Kerschel 332. This is a section from the first movement. So as this chain phrase begins, it begins with the links in 2 measure units. That's how it starts. Listen to that. 1 measure, 2 measures. Another measure. Now 1 measure. 1 measure, 1 measure, 1 measure, 1 measure, 1 measure, 1 measure, okay, and so on. So it starts out with 2 measure links, and it goes to 1 measure links. There's another version of this sequence elsewhere in the sonata movement in which the harmonic rhythm even speeds up more than that, using a hemiola in which every 2 beats becomes a link in the chain. So it's a very interesting technique to use. In fact, any kind of analysis you do of any piece from the Baroque or the Viennese Classical, the odds are you're going to come across these things, especially in development sections or transitional sections. So the best way to deal with them is, again, you call it a chain phrase. That's all you have to do. There's no great, you know, mystery to the analysis. And then just figure out where the links in the chain are. That is, what are the iterations of the sequence? And that's where you need to analyze the sequence for its harmony and its melody. Be sure you know what kind of sequence it is. You know, is it a descending fifth sequence, or a sequence in thirds, or descending thirds, or is it an ascending sequence, or what is it? Be sure you know, and then you'll understand the chain phrase. Beyond that, you usually don't have to worry about them very much. You can make a little sketch of the harmonic motion or something like that, and you've probably got it done. So they're really pretty easy to deal with, which is nice to know. Now finally, moving into the last major topic here, and this is actually a very wonderful and a very beautiful structure, but we're just going to cover it sort of in its basics in this lecture, and then later on down the road, we're going to be discussing some very fine points about it. But this is a magnificent structure that's called a double period, a double period. And it's in some ways very simple. The idea here is that it is two periods, one after another. In other words, period number one with its antecedent and its consequent, and then period number two with its antecedent and its consequent. But the two periods together, all right, taking the two periods together, form a kind of super period, an uber period, in which the first of the two periods acts like an antecedent and the second of the two periods acts like a consequent. That's a really cool structure if you think about it. The way it works is that you've got, therefore, four phrases. The critical thing that makes a double period, is that the first of the two periods, the first one, ends on a half cadence or its equivalent. That's what makes it all work. Because therefore, the first period itself isn't completely closed off. Get that? You have to think that through, but that first period doesn't completely close off. The second period is the one that comes to the full closure. So therefore, the first period itself is a structure held together by its own internal periodic structure, and the same thing is true of the second period, but then the two periods themselves are held together by their own periodic structure. So I often think of it as two beams that are sitting horizontally, that are lying horizontally next to each other, two beams, which are held together then by a cross beam between them, sort of like an X-shaped support between two horizontal beams. It's a very, very strong structure, and as such, it's perfectly suited for the primary melodic materials, especially in the Viennese classical, which just loved this kind of completely, perfectly strong closed-off structure. So here's an example from Beethoven. This is the first antecedent. Okay, consequent. And half cadence. Then. This is the second antecedent. And the second consequent. And this one, closes off completely. Alright. So in other words, period number one is acting a little bit like an uber antecedent, and period number two acts as an uber consequent. That's what makes it a double period. A double period is not a repeated period. It's not a period with, you know, repeated antecedents and repeated consequences. It's a structure all into itself. Let's hear it again. It needs some repeating to make sure it's clear. First antecedent. Half cadence. This is the consequent. And it ends on a half cadence. Now, next antecedent. to its half cadence, and then finally, the final consequent. So one way to identify the double period, as you'll notice, is that the four phrases, three of them are half cadences, or the equivalent, some kind of something inconclusive. The only really conclusive cadence is at the end of the whole thing. Another thing to notice is that considering the uber period here, that is period one as a kind of antecedent and period two as a kind of consequent, notice that they are parallel with each other. That is, both of the antecedents begin with the same material. The internal periods, on the other hand, period number one and its internal structure is contrasting the two halves. So, in other words, the two individual halves of it are contrasting periods, but the uber period is parallel. We would call this a parallel double period. When you're speaking of the kind of double period, parallel or contrasting has to do with the uber period. Now, with that, this is a distinction that I think is worth making. Most double periods are parallel. That is, the two uber periods are parallel to each other. There are such things as contrasting double periods, in which the two uber periods are contrasting to each other. But if that is only heard alone, a contrasting double period, it becomes the same thing as a two-part song form, which is the subject of some future lectures. Because of that, I don't recommend the use of the term contrasting double period except in some very specific limitations. Essentially, those limitations will be is if that contrasting double period is half or at least part of a correspondingly larger structure. It's something to get into much later. We'll talk, maybe not even much later, we'll be talking about it when we get to two-part song form, which is actually the next lecture. For now, as you look through music, double periods on the whole, just seen all by themselves, are going to be parallel. If you see something that looks like a standalone contrasting double period, it's not part of anything else, your best bet is to call it a two-part song form rather than a double period. I usually restrict the use of the term double period to these parallel varieties, unless, as I said, the double period is part of a larger structure, in which case it may actually very well be a contrasting double period within the larger structure. It sounds like hair splitting. I think maybe it is. But in fact, there are some textbooks out there, including some classics like the Percy Gurchus, in which he really tries to make the distinction between parallel and contrasting double periods, and just winds up confusing the heck out of everybody, including me. So, parallel double periods. Since I've been blabbing here for just a bit, let's just listen to that Beethoven once more, shall we? Half cadence. Consequent. End of period one. This is period two, of course. Moving to its half cadence. Finally, this last consequent. Really, finally, rounds it off. I would recommend listening to this particular phrase any number of times, this period, this double period, to really make sure you hear the strength of it. You also might want to take a look, if you have the Wallace Berry book that we use as an adjunct to our courses, if you take a look on page 22, example 1.43, there's another very standard parallel double period. So, and then he also gives right after that, example 1.44 on the next page, he shows you a parallel double period with an expansion of the final consequent. Remember that a double period can have all of the same expansions that a single period can have. So in other words, a double period, if it's expanded with repetitions and, you know, so on, can turn into a very long piece. It could be the structure of an entire piece. And there are pieces like that. So in other words, be aware of the fact that this structure can really get pretty big. So there it is. This is the whole skinny on expansions of periods, which we did in two lectures. We did a lecture on phrase groups, and then this particular lecture, which is on the chain phrase, pretty easy to deal with, and the double period, which at a basic level, pretty easy to deal with as well. And in future lectures, we'll start putting these one-part song forms, which is what all periods are, one-part song forms, we'll start putting those into larger structures, which are, interestingly enough, called two-part song forms and three-part song forms. Nobody can say that they're not being very plain and clear about nomenclature.